I was born into a family where child sex trafficking was the norm. So New Zealand has an underbelly. What my grandmother and my father did, they were dealing with fairly elite people. There were police cars, animals being killed and sacrificed, children's lives were taken as well. The grandmaster chose not to have me sacrificed. This is truth, it's going to be exposed. Hello everyone, and a big special beautiful hello to you wonderful survivors of child sexual abuse out there. My name's Gloria Masters and I am the founder and CEO of Handing the Shame Back, a foundation set up here in Aotearoa for the up to 1 in 3 adult survivors of child sexual abuse roaming our country and indeed the rest of the world. Able and willing to share all of this with you. However, there is a severe trigger warning. This is truth, but it will shock. I have lived in New Zealand all my life, and I was born into a family where child sex trafficking was the norm. So I was trained by my grandmother. My father sexually abused me basically from the time I was born, and he leased me to his friends, to some gangs. There were only three in New Zealand at the time, and to the Freemasons, among others. So what I've managed to do with that, it's taken me decades to heal, but what I've managed to do with that is to turn it back into giving and helping other survivors. And I do that by, well, several ways, I think. One is I've set up a foundation called Handing the Shame Back, and that is where our beautiful survivors, male, female, transgender, whoever, can come to that channel, get some resources and support. I also, yes, I'm an author as well, and I've written a couple of books. So one is my memoir on Angel's Wings, My Flight from Trauma to Grace, and this is in all versions on GloriaMasters.com. It's not a pretty read, it's a tough read, but it's truth, and it's time for truth to be revealed. The second book I have written for our beautiful survivors out there, and it's called Flight Path to Healing, and this is an experiential guide. So what I mean is you can pick up the book and open to any page and you will have some snippets and some ideas to help support and guide you on your journey. It's your flight path. So we end the book with a CSA, Child Sexual Abuse Survivor Degree, because that's what you deserve, and you should have had that from day dot. Not the experience, but the degree in overcoming. One of my earliest memories was being, I must have done something that my father didn't like, and to be fair, I would say he was a psychopath, and I label him as that because no one could do to their beautiful daughter what he did to me with no remorse or regard. And so what happened was something had angered him. So he pulled me by my hair and put me in the garage where there were some apple crates. He put me inside an apple crate, and back in those days they had slats. Apple crates had slats. He threw me in there. I would have been about 3. And then he nailed another apple crate on top of me. And that was my punishment. And my mother was not around. She was a classic narcissist. So what that is someone who can only see themselves, their own needs, and believe they are above everyone else. And if you fit in and do what a narcissist wants, as in my mother, then you may get some positive feedback. But for her, to be honest, I was mainly in the way and a nuisance, and so she was often absent from the home, which gave my father a free pass into doing whatever he wanted, turning a blind eye. She was very disengaged. My parents should not have been parents. They didn't understand the beauty of children and the special gift they are. They met back in the day through the Catholic Church, and they started dating and got married very young, and then had us on the youngest child. To be honest, for a grandmother to be paid a commission to train her beautiful granddaughter into how to be a sex slave and appealing to men and women who would pay money for that suggested to me that this was well known to her and part of her history. And for my father to have been willing to do that as well and give me to his friends or sell me to his friends was so easy for them that I don't know, but I suspect it was also a feature in their lives. But I do think child sexual abuse affects up to 1 in 3 adults. And I don't say that lightly. New Zealand lead the world in child sexual abuse. We know that by the time a girl is 16, she will have been sexually abused. Not might have been, will have been, up to 1 in 3. They say that for boys, the number is between 1 in 4 and 1 in 6. But I'm here to say, I think it's a lot more than that, because for our beautiful men who have survived this, there's not permission for them to speak out easily. They're conditioned, you see, to be strong and take a concrete pill and not have anything bad happen to them, because they're meant to look after the rest of us. So the numbers are huge. We lead the world. We also lead the world in infanticide, suicide, domestic violence. Need I go on? So New Zealand has an underbelly, and we are not dealing with this. Well, because my mother was largely absent, my father had free rein. And because of the leasing out to the gangs and to the Freemasons every month, what that meant was he became very, very wealthy. And to the point where he imported one of the first Pontiacs into New Zealand in 1968. One of my earliest memories was being at my grandmother's house, and she lived near central Auckland. She was quite central, and she had a house. I'm trying to think, it was the Newton area. And I remember I was 6 years old, and so I was at my grandmother's house, and she had dressed me up into a pretty dress and had given me a bath, which was very unusual. And I was sitting in her front parlour, and she said some very special men were coming and that I had to do what they said and do anything they wanted, and then I would get an ice cream. And so up drove this car. It was a black car, and it had flags on either side of the windows at the front, and out of the car came two men, and they were in suits, quite dark suits, and I now know they were bodyguards. So the third person that emerged came into my grandmother's front parlour, and he was then taken. I had to hold his hand and take him into my grandmother's bedroom, and there he could.
What my grandmother and my father did,
they were dealing with fairly elite people, because this type of abuse does not happen unless you can pay for this. So back in those days, there were fairly high up people. There were doctors and lawyers. Law enforcement was involved. And we'll get to that point later, because people often ask why I never rang the police. Why I never went to the police. I didn't, because they were involved. So I think what happened for me was, between 6 and 11 years of age, my father would have sex parties at home. My mother was absent for those. She would often disappear to her mother's house. And the men that would arrive would be given a number. And the number they would give meant that they could bid on me, and they could have me whichever way they wanted, or two at a time. And depending on what they wanted, was how much they had to pay for that. So you can imagine, as a small child, I was terrified. And so what my father and grandmother quickly learned to do was to drug me. And so to drug me, can I tell you, I was grateful for the drugs, because I could not stay in my body during those experiences. And frankly, I'm very lucky to be alive, because as the years wore on, the sexual abuse that continued meant that more and more acts were required. So we're talking animals being involved, child exploitation material, as in videos. There's over 100 videos of me. Back in those days, they weren't videos. They were done on the old projector screen. And I will never forget the sound of the projector screen whirring and the big leather case that these films would go into. But they were worth a lot of money. And so people, my father's friends and people he leased me to, would pay good money for that. So what that meant was, I was always either drugged or starved, because the thinner I looked, the younger I looked, and the pedophiles would pay more for that. Oh, look, this is just a tiny bit of it. I was leased out of a nightclub in Kay Road in our red light district, and I was a child. I was leased out of there between the age of 11 and 16. And that's where I was upstairs in a room. I was chained to a bed, and men and women would come in and pay the owner of the club for the privilege, which sounds sick, of abusing me. The only people that were kind to me at that nightclub were the people that worked there. They hated my father, and they were very upset with what was happening, but they were trapped as well. And at least they gave me food and gave me something to drink. But I was usually pretty drugged. The other thing that would happen there is that there was a stage or a podium downstairs in that nightclub, and that's where all the movies and photos were taken. And I would have to spend days filming there. And so that was a whole other nightmare. But again, I was drugged. And I remember waking up one night. I was at home in my father's house. I was 11 years old, and I looked down at my arms, and I swear there were worms crawling out of them. And I was terrified, but I knew I couldn't wake him, because there was no point. So I think the biggest thing for me, one of the biggest hallmarks of this for me, and what your viewers need to understand, is there was no safe person for me to tell. There was no safe person to go to. I tried to tell my mother, and she would not believe me. I tried to, in every way I could, escape what was happening, but my father was a psychopath. And he had said,
if I ever told anyone, he would kill a family member or the dog. So I believed him because he was a scary man. Now, what happened was at the age of 11, my parents separated and I got left with my father. This may surprise you, but that's when my nightmare began, because I was left with my father and brother in that house and they could do whatever they wanted to me. There were no other females around. I tried to take my own life between 11 and 12 and a half, three times, but I didn't succeed. And the reason that I tried is because no one cared. No one really wanted to know my story. I used to run up to the phone box at night. Sometimes we didn't have, I couldn't use a telephone at home, to ring the police, but I'd dial the number to ring the police and then I'd hang up because I knew the police had been involved and some were involved with my abuse. I knew that because the Freemasons were once a month. I would be taken to one of their lodges once a month. Other children were there and satanic ritual abuse would take place. But equally, there were certain days throughout the year or certain weekends when I would be taken to a place out in the country. Now, in my mind, it was out Waimauku Way, but I can't be sure of that. And so what would happen there, it was a weekend of celebration for these Freemasons. And this is why I know there were fairly high up people involved, because there were police cars and there were police guarding the entrance. And back in those days, the police cars were black and white. So I saw the police. I knew the police were there. Now, whether they were inside and engaging as well, I don't know, but they knew enough to be protecting the people that were there. It was satanic ritual abuse, so children would be there. So this type of abuse involves offerings, so it's blood, it's animals being killed and sacrificed. Children's lives were taken as well. And in fact, at one point during one of these sessions, I heard my father talking to the Grand Master, who was one of the highest up in the Freemasons, and asking him, saying to him, "Oh, look, I'll sacrifice her if you're needing a child of that age." But I was getting a wee bit older, so I wasn't quite as appealing anymore. And I don't know, luckily for me, the Grand Master chose not to have me sacrificed. But there was human sacrifice. Please know that not every Freemason is abusing children or trafficking children. This is a select few who have reached certain levels. So there is chanting. There is ceremonial procedure with all of it. And I knew it was satanic ritual abuse because during the monthly meetings, these men were wearing hoods. This was at the lodge I was taken to. And so the children at these events, I wasn't the only child, there would be a nurse and a doctor there who would check us children out and then drug us. So there would be a needle in our arms and then we would be laid out in like a circle. So around, you'll see with the Freemasons, there's lots of symbols they use and one is a compass, but there's a circle embedded in that as well. So the children we would be laid out around that. So it was marked out on the platform we were on. And the Freemasons would come and there would be chanting and there would be a process that would be undergone. But it was very, very evil and very, very scary. And I know I'm taking a risk saying any of this, but it's time for the truth to be told. And I gain nothing from it apart from helping other beautiful survivors out there know that I believe you. You couldn't make this up. I believe I was born into this family and then highlighted or spotlighted as being a child who could be trafficked. And the grooming and the kind of mind control that took place just was beyond imagination. But please remember, and this is throughout the world, this is not just New Zealand, but please know that where neglect and abandonment exist, abuse will always find a home. And it certainly took pride of place in our home. So once my mother and the others had left, I was with my father and brother. It was, as I said earlier, those were the 18 months I was left there. I nearly died. I thought I was going to die, apart from trying to take my own life. My father, you see, had no measure on him. There was no one to stop him. And so one example would be, I would be stripped naked and treated like a dog. So they would tie a collar and leash around my neck, lead me around the floor on all fours, make me beg, pant, howl. My only way of communicating with them was like a dog would. And the reason for that was they wanted to laugh at me and ridicule me. I had to eat food off the floor only using my mouth. I could only lick water out of a bowl. I would be tied up on the back deck and left. And the reason they did that is because they could. My brother then became more involved and got his friends involved. There were no holes barred on any of this. And I was also a slave in the home. So I had to do everything. I had to cook, I had to clean, I had to do washing. I was 11. I didn't know how to do much of any of it. But I was living with a deranged psychopath and his mini-me. So the photos, the videoing, the abuse went on and on and on. I tried to escape. I put myself in an abuser's boot one night, but unfortunately he brought me back the next day. I was desperate, you see, to get away. And then every second weekend I would go to my mother's, and she was a good, strong Catholic. And so being a good, strong Catholic, I had to put on that or take that persona. So for the 2 out of 14 days I was there, I would cling to her, I would cry, I would beg, I would hide, don't take me back, don't make me go, don't take me back, don't make me go. But she always would. Now, as a mum myself, can I tell you, you don't ignore that. You can't ignore that. So she was very complicit, very complicit. The child that left her house on a Sunday night was never the same child that arrived the Friday later. Very late, very lucky to be alive. I will not overstate that. At 11, between 11 and 12 and a half, I was with my father, left there. A miracle occurred. So I had my angels around me, and a miracle occurred because at 12 and a half, I came home from school early one day, and keep in mind my only safe place was school. And at school, I could be me. And so I was out of control. In every way possible, I was showing how traumatized I was, how distressed I was, how broken I was, how frightened I was. And so I was always in trouble. I was always being strapped. I was out of the classroom more than in. But it was a cry for help, you see. Instead of saying, there goes that naughty girl again, perhaps if teachers had asked, what's happening in her life. An outcome may have been different. But at 12 and a half, I walked home and I heard laughing. And in my father's room was he with a woman, and I just went into shock because you've got to remember I was trained to be his mistress. So I was his mistress, his slave, his everything, and conditioned to be that. So I went into shock and I turned and ran out of the house, up to my mother's house, which is about 5 kilometres away, and I couldn't speak. I was terrorised. And for the first time, she looked at me and asked what was wrong. And I said, he's got this woman in his bed, he's got this woman in his bed. So she rang the Archbishop of Auckland, who she was friends with, and his words were, get her out of the house, it's not safe for her to be there living with an adulterer. Let that sink in. It's okay for me to be abused, sold, leased, trafficked, filmed, terrorised, traumatised, drugged, nearly killed, but he's an adulterer. So anyway, I think that saved my life because she had no choice but to remove me from his care. Now, that wasn't what she wanted, to be fair. She didn't really want me at all. I mean, as you would imagine, if she had, I would have been with her. So I was so excited about being able to live with her, but she took me back to him, and I had to be the one to tell him I wouldn't be there anymore. And I begged her, come in with me, I'm scared of him, I'm scared of him. She wouldn't do it. Of course she wouldn't do it. She hadn't been there for me at all prior to that. So I went in and told him I couldn't be there anymore. So as we drove away, I was just in shock and very traumatised, as you would appreciate. But then my whole world fell apart, if you can appreciate, because she then let me know I would have to go back to him every second weekend. Can you imagine the horror of that? That was actually worse. Because I thought I was safe. So for 12 out of 14 days between the ages of 12 and a half and 16, I was relatively safe. No one was abusing me. No one was hurting me. Yes, I was ignored most of the time. That's how my mother worked. I was a nuisance. But those 2 days of every fortnight and half of school holidays, I was back with the monster. And do you know what? He made sure I earned money for him. So the dilemma for me, it nearly broke me, having to go back. But somehow I made it through. At the age of 16, I didn't have to see him again. So I didn't. Yeah, so the law, legally, I didn't have to see him once I turned 16, so I never did. I was able to make that choice. So at family weddings and funerals and things, I had to be there, but I never willingly spoke to him or saw him again. Tried to bribe me. But the child who was 11 was no longer in existence, and the child who was 16 knew. So, as you can appreciate from that point, it was disaster because I was a broken, traumatised child. I was a wreck. I was a complete disaster. It's taken me decades to heal from this trauma. One of those incidents is enough to break a person. But what happened was I developed what you call this false self, and this false self was what got me through life. So I was able to put on a smile, put on the charm, put on the persona. And because I could do that, it got me through and it got me engaged. But of course, once I didn't need it anymore, I was highly dissociated, and traumatized. Dissociation is where, for survivors, what we do is we leave our bodies and it's almost like we look down. So we can see what's happening to us, but we're no longer in there. And we do it because it's like our mind protecting us from the trauma. A good example is being in a car accident. You're not going to remember the car accident straight away because your mind is protecting you from the trauma of it. When you are healed enough, it will come back to you. The same for child sexual abuse. And so for me, I was dissociated a lot of the time because I wasn't able to deal with it. I wasn't healed enough. I wasn't well enough. I wasn't strong enough. And so little bits and pieces would come, but not a lot. The other thing that happened that I never told you about was that my grandmother forced abortions on me. And she did that because, of course, when the abuse continued, I became pregnant many times. So she would perform them on me, and they had a friend in the Freemasons who was a doctor, and if he was needed to attend, he would. But so that happened as well. So the horror just goes on and on, but I'm here to say there's hope. And between the ages of 16 and 32, when the memories really came at me, pretty much, although I've had friends who have said to me that I did tell them things. When I was 19, I apparently told a friend of mine a story about this, what my father was doing to me, but I'd forgotten that. Another friend said something in my 20s. Yes, I'd said some things to her. But I think the memories really came at me when I became a parent. And for some of the survivors watching, that's quite common for us. When we become a parent ourselves, we can get triggered. Can you appreciate the horror of the thousands of memories that came at me? To be honest, I don't think I would be here today had I not been a mum, because I didn't want to deal with what was coming at me. It was so scary and frightening. As a result of me telling my story, I have lost my entire family. They never wanted this to be out there. They would prefer this was not known. My mother's condition was, and I tried many times to change her mind. I could be in her life if I chose never to discuss this again and stop bringing this to the fore. I can't do that. I have to have my own back. I have to live in truth. And that is why I'm speaking out. This is truth. It's going to be exposed.